Tommy McNeil. Pope Francis began the first papal visit to Ireland in almost 40 years by expressing the outrage he shares with the Catholic community over what he calls repugnant crimes committed by priests who raped and molested children, and also the failure of church authorities to address them. VOA's Sabina Castelfranco has more.
The last time the Pope visited Ireland was long before his election to lead the world's Catholics. He told journalists traveling with him on the papal plane that he spent 3 months in Ireland to learn English in 1980, and coming back to the country makes him particularly happy. He also said he enjoys being with families, and this is the second world meeting of families he is attending, following the one held in the U.S. city of Philadelphia. After a meeting with the Irish president and other authorities, the Pope spoke at Dublin Castle, where he addressed the issue of clerical sexual abuse.
As VOA's Sabina Castelfranco reporting, at least 2 people were killed and 4 injured after an explosion by a suicide bomber near an election office in the northeastern city of Jalalabad. No group has claimed responsibility for the attack Saturday morning, but an Islamic State-affiliated group and the Taliban are active in the northeastern region. The Taliban has been warning Afghans not to vote in the upcoming parliamentary and local elections. The United States and the Taliban are reported to be in the early stages of discussions for the first time since 2012. Retired U.S. Army Colonel Christopher Kalinda, who fought in Afghanistan and later served as a senior military advisor, was instrumental in helping set up those talks, in part through his own discussion with Taliban officials. Kalinda told VOA arranging meetings not been easy, with all sides not willing to cooperate. More at voanews.com. This is VOA News. In the United States, it is often said that no one is above the law, even the president. But what happens when the president is implicated in criminal wrongdoing? The question took on new relevance after President Trump's former lawyer, Michael Cohen, pleaded guilty to violating campaign finance laws, which he says was done at the direction of Mr. Trump. Legal analysts say the president's possible involvement in the campaign violations could put him in legal jeopardy. George Washington University Law School professor Paul Schiff Berman.
He is potentially now an unindicted co-conspirator and could be indicted. Now, there is an open question as to whether a sitting president can be indicted for criminal wrongdoing. Obviously, he could be impeached, but that's not going to happen as long as Republicans hold the House and the Senate.
And during a rally in West Virginia, Mr. Trump ignored his legal difficulties and rallied his base. Hurricane Lane is now downgraded to a tropical storm, although the U.S. National Weather Service warns the storm still packs torrential rains and high winds for the Hawaiian Islands. There have been no reports of injury so far. Some areas have recorded as much as 89 centimeters of rain. Scott Morrison, Australia's new prime minister, is now promising to heal the wounds after his predecessor, Malcolm Turnbull, was forced out by party rivals. In an internal party room ballot, Morrison narrowly defeated the former Home Affairs Minister Peter Dutton by a vote of 45 to 50. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports for VOA.
Turnbull had been weakened by poor polling and by concerted attacks by right-wing factions, who considered him to be too much of a moderate. In his last press conference as leader, he said it had been a shameful week for politics.
Australians will be just dumbstruck and so appalled by the conduct of the last week. You know, disunity is death in Australian politics, as everyone says.
The new Prime Minister's task is to heal a fractured and chaotic coalition government in time for the next election. That won't be easy, said Paul Kelly, an editor at the Australian newspaper.
Yeah, it's Phil Mercer reporting for VOA. President Trump has directed Secretary of State Mike Pompeo to delay a planned trip to North Korea, citing insufficient progress on denuclearization. Mr. Trump puts some blame on Beijing, saying he does not believe China is helping because of trade tensions between Beijing and Washington. The Trump administration says it is reexamining relations with El Salvador after the country broke diplomatic ties with Taiwan in favor of China. In a statement, the White House criticized the country's decision as well as Beijing's diplomatic outreach that led to the move. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. I'm in for Peter Clotty, who's currently on assignment in Ghana.
The application for bail has been fixed Monday 27th, so that's at 9 in Gulu, over the district of Gulu, before the High Court. We are prepared as the legal team to go and argue the application for bail.
Asuman Basarirwa is part of the legal team for Ugandan Member of Parliament Bobby Wine.
It's clear that the legal route has led us to a dead end in the context of the result that has come out of that court. I respectfully disagree and reject the position that was arrived at by the Constitutional Court.
Zimbabwe's opposition leader Nelson Chamisa speaking after yesterday's Constitutional Court ruling on the July 30th elections.
The first thing is that the government and the CNDF today would better understand that Burundi is not their own property. Burundi is for all Burundians, and we are all committed to give our contribution to build up this nation.
Burundi opposition leader and the deputy speaker of the parliament, Agathon Rwasa. Those stories and more are coming up right here on Nightline Africa. The legal team for Uganda's popular legislator Bobby Wine, currently in detention, has applied for bail in civilian court after the state dropped an illegal weapons charge before military court. The lawmaker was immediately rearrested shortly after he was freed by the general court-martial and taken to civilian court, where he was charged with treason. Bobby Wine's lawyer, Mr. Asuman Basalirwa, tells me that even though his family and lawyers can currently visit him, access to his personal doctor is still restricted.
Well, he appeared in court on Thursday, charged with the treason. He applied for bail on Friday. The bail papers were put, and the application for bail has been fixed for Monday 27th, August, at 9 in Gulu, Nova district of Gulu, before the High Court.
Okay.
So we are prepared as the legal team to go and argue the application for bail.
Now, when Robert Chagulanyi appeared before military court on Thursday, I believe, he seemed to be in pain, using a crutch to walk. What is the state of his health currently?
He said he's still in pain. Of course, he cannot walk on his own. He has to be supported. And he has still not had an opportunity to access his personal physician. Attempts were made for the personal physician to visit him in the military detention, but the physician was greatly limited and restricted. He didn't have freedom to engage him. They couldn't share with him the medical records, because the military doctor had taken some investigations, but the details were not shared. So his personal physician has not had the full opportunity to access and investigate his situation.
Before he appeared in public, he had been detained a couple of days before he was accessed by his family, including and his lawyers. When you finally saw him, were there signs that he had been tortured?
Yes, I'm among the first people who saw him when he was in military detention.
Mm.
At that time, his face was swollen. The body had open wounds, fresh wounds. He could neither walk nor stand on his own. And he couldn't speak audibly. He couldn't open his eyes well. And he was evidently in pain. And when I engaged him, he told me he had been badly beaten, you know, kicked all over the body. And
did the government explain why it took long for the family, for Bobby Wine's family and his lawyers to access him after he was arrested?
No, they didn't explain.
Are there laws?
No explanation was given.
Are there laws against torture in Uganda?
Yeah, there are. Uganda is a signatory to many international conventions against torture. Uganda has ratified them. Uganda has even enacted an anti-torture law. So the legal framework on torture exists in Uganda.
Let's talk about some of his charges. Initially, he was charged with possession of two firearms. Why did the military court drop those charges? What was the reasoning behind it?
Well, no reason was given for dropping the charges, but I think we suspect that perhaps they discovered the charges were ridiculous and bogus, but no reasons were given. And in any case, they are not under any legal obligation to give reasons for dropping charges.
And what is the basis for the treason charges?
Well, it is alleged that Bob Wine and others picked stones and pelted one of the president's vehicles.
Mm.
And that, in law, tantamounts to treason.
So he was set free by the military court, but as soon as he was set free, he was rearrested and taken into custody. Is the family able to visit him right now? Is he able to access his lawyers and his family?
Yes. In the civilian prison is accessible. There aren't as many restrictions as the military prison, so it's accessible.
Okay. Do you...
Although another difficulty came with the civilian prison, that the lawyer, the doctors were again given limited access.
Okay, so the doctors were granted access, but it is limited.
Yes.
In what sense is it limited?
They are not free to carry out investigations that they would have wanted.
Has government spoken out on the death of his driver?
They have not spoken out on that matter. They have not said whether they have carried out any arrests. They have not said whether they are carrying out any investigations. I attended the burial. They didn't send a representative. So they have completely kept quiet about that whole episode.
Mr. Asuman Basalirwa is the lawyer for Ugandan Member of Parliament Bobby Wine, currently in detention. Basalirwa speaking to me from Uganda's capital, Kampala. Zimbabwe's Constitutional Court dismissed a challenge seeking to nullify the results of the country's July 30th presidential election. Yesterday's ruling cleared the way for the inauguration of incumbent President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Anita Powell has more on this story.
Chief Justice Luke Malaba took nearly an hour to go through the many details of what he said was a unanimous judgment, dismissing the opposition's claims of rigging and declaring Mnangagwa the victor.
The application is dismissed with cause in terms of section 93, subsection 4, subparagraph A of the Constitution, Emmerson Dumbledore Mnangagwa is duly declared the winner of the presidential elections held on the 3rd of July, 2018.
The official results showed Mnangagwa winning a majority of the vote, 50.8%. Opposition candidate Nelson Chamisa trailed with just over 44%. Chamisa argued the results were not accurate and that he was the winner. International election observers have said the vote suffered from irregularities, and Chamisa's lawyers on Wednesday presented what they said was clear evidence that the results had been falsified. Zimbabwean author and academic Ibo Mandaza said he was disappointed by the news and maintained that the election was, as the opposition claims, rigged.
To be party to, in my view, a fraud is disgraceful. Disgraceful. I feel sorry for myself. I feel sorry for Zimbabwe. I feel sorry for the road ahead. We're in a mess.
Opposition figures at the courthouse did not immediately say what they would do next. Officials told VOA they would meet in the coming week to explore all their options, including protests. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
And still in Zimbabwe, after the Constitutional Court ruled on the contested July 30th election results, the opposition still insists that the election was stolen from them. Reporter Kuznai Zivanashi has this report.
The court confirmed ruling ZANU-PF presidential candidate Emmerson Mnangagwa as the winner. But the leader of the opposition, MDC Alliance Nelson Chamisa, who was the applicant in the case, says he disagrees with the ruling.
It's clear that the legal route has led us to a dead end in the context of the result that has come out of that court. I respectfully disagree and reject the position that was arrived at by the Constitutional Court.
Louis Uriri is a lawyer on the legal team representing the ruling ZANU-PF in the Constitutional Court hearing. He offered advice to all Zimbabweans.
The advice to them and generally to the people of Zimbabwe is to put this behind us and to move forward. To move forward because as a nation we owe it to ourselves to begin to progress, to move away from the polarization that has come as a result of this.
Uriri's client, President Mnangagwa, has also called for unity amongst Zimbabweans and called on opposition to join in nation building. The call for unity may not materialize anytime soon, as Chamisa insists that they won the election and will explore other alternatives so their presidential mandate is honored.
Yes, the Constitutional Court route has been shut, which is the legal route. The legal door is not the only door to happiness. There are many other doors. The political doors are going to be opened very soon. Using our constitution, we have the right to peaceful protest, and we have the right to peaceful demonstrate.
Last demonstrations resulted in the loss of lives after soldiers dispersed the protesters by firing live ammunition at unarmed civilians. Yesterday, ZANU-PF Secretary for Finance, Patrick Chinamasa, who is also Zimbabwe's finance minister, warned Chamisa against inciting people to protest. Chamisa says party officials will meet next week to determine which of several options they may adopt as a way forward. If numbers projected by the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission are anything to go by, then nearly half of the electorate supports the opposition. Observers say that Mnangagwa, who is set to be inaugurated tomorrow, will have to reach out to these voters to heal the country and move it out of years of stagnation. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinavashe from Harare.
Burundi's opposition members have called on the East African community to intervene and bring an end to the current political crisis that erupted in 2015. This comes after the opposition leaders criticized the government of implementing two constitutions at the same time. For more on this, Moses Havyarimana has the story from Burundi's capital, Bujumbura.
In May this year, a referendum was conducted that saw the amendment of the country's 2005 constitution that extended the presidential term from 5 to 7 years and also protected Burundians from being extradited outside the country by the international court. The move was criticized by critics, saying that it was aimed to promote impunity and protect those who conducted human rights violations in the country. After the new constitution was promulgated in June, Burundi opposition leader and deputy speaker of the parliament, Agathon Rwasa, say that both constitutions are still being used by the regime.
The first thing is that the government and the CNDD-FDD today would better understand that Burundi is not their own property. Burundi is for all Burundians, and we are all committed to give our contribution to build up this nation. They'd better understand that Burundi is in a situation which is a little bit chaotic because we are having two constitutions cohabiting together, which has never occurred in this world.
The Burundi opposition leaders argue that the incumbent president is still in the office because of the 2005 constitution, which was rebuked. Article 288 of the recently promulgated constitution states that institutions elected in 2015 will remain until 2020. Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza said that recent amendment of constitution was a sign of democracy in the country. He says that from now onwards that anyone who will try to oust the institutions that were democratically elected by the citizens will face serious consequences and that the country will continue to promote culture of democracy. As the regional mediated dialogue is expected to resume in Tanzania next month, Burundi opposition leader Agathon Rwasa called on the East African community to conclude the dialogue that has been ongoing for more than 2 years now.
Tell the heads of state that there is a need for them to be conscious of what is happening in Burundi, that it would be better if we can conclude with this dialogue and put up some conducive environment.
The regional mediated dialogue had stalled for the last 2 years as government boycotted any talk involving opposition members it accuses of plotting a failed coup in 2015. The facilitation team under former Tanzanian President Benjamin Mkapa said that the next dialogue session will only involve those who are not wanted by the Burundi judicial body. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
You're listening to Nightline Africa on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm your host, Jackson Vunganyi, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, in the wake of widespread revelations about sexual abuse by powerful figures in America's entertainment and political world, it has been said that many of these abuses take place with the knowledge of other people, what are called third-party observers. This raises the question, if you are witness to a crime, in this case a sexual crime, assault or battery, are you obligated to report it to the police? What if you are aware that a crime is going to be committed, but you do nothing to prevent it from occurring? Can you be criminally charged if you do nothing at all? Dr. Zachary Kaufman is a lecturer in law and fellow at Stanford Law School in California, and he's a senior fellow at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. He recently published research in which he examines bad Samaritan laws and statutes that impose legal duty for anyone witnessing acts of sexual crimes to assist and report such crimes. He tells me that in this era of the Me Too movement, it is necessary to align law and society more closely with morality.
An upstander intervenes, whereas a bystander does not. And so whether the situation is a crime or a crisis, the bystander remains passive, whereas the upstander becomes actively involved.
Okay. And so you suggest that countries, nations, need to be more aggressive, to have an aggressive approach to how they deal with people who are aware of crimes, and in this case, sexual crimes. These are third-party observers, people who are standing by as these actions or these acts are taking place. How can you codify what should or could be a moral duty to report sexual crimes?
So taking a step back, you know, I think an eternal question for us all to consider is what duties, if any, we owe our fellow human beings, and whether they are, you know, our relatives or our friends or colleagues or our neighbors or maybe even strangers. Mm. You know, in a time of crisis, what is morally and perhaps even legally what should be incumbent upon us all to have as responsibilities? So here in the United States, I've been particularly concerned recently, as have many people, with revelations from the Me Too movement about sexual crimes. So the Me Too movement has shown not only how rampant such sexual abuse is, but also how often third parties disregard or even enable it. And so that's led me to wonder if there are things that we might be able to do to prompt would-be bystanders to act instead as upstanders. And so in my current research, I've proposed both positive incentives and negative incentives or carrots and sticks that would prompt these third parties to become more actively involved. And so the carrots would be to reward people who become involved, and the sticks, as it were, would be to punish bystanders through what are called bad Samaritan laws.
So basically, if somebody is watching an act of sexual abuse or harassment taking place and they do not report it, they should be punished?
Generally speaking, yes. Although in my prescriptions, I include a number of kinds of bystanders that would be excused. Mm. So there are six categories.
There are some exemptions to it.
That's right. Exactly. And I've come up with six.
So would you argue that one has a legal duty or a moral duty to report sexual misconduct?
Generally speaking, yes. A moral duty, at least. Whether they have a legal duty, of course, just depends on whether the law exists in that jurisdiction. And so part of what I'm trying to make the case for is that we should spread, standardize, and strengthen these laws so that more people are subject to them. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the huge revelations, I think, from this Me Too movement really has been just how widespread knowledge has been of sexual crimes.
Right.
And perhaps if more people, you know, had come forward, maybe we would have seen fewer of these
abuses.
Crimes committed.
Right. And it is quite striking how often these abuses take place and how other people have reason to suspect what's going on, but they never speak out. Why do you think people are often hesitant to speak out in cases where they have viewed or they have seen or they have experienced or they have observed these incidences of sexual abuse? What is that hesitation?
So I think there's a range of reasons, and I think it can vary per context. We know from what some bystanders have said themselves in certain high-profile cases, that indifference, unfortunately, tragically, is part of the reason that some people simply don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And also are other people, you know, in a more charitable view of why some people might not speak up, some people are scared. Some people are genuinely afraid for themselves and others if they were to speak up. You know, there are also other reasons that people offer for why they didn't speak up, but we don't, you know, it's difficult to determine sometimes if they're true. So,
Dr. Zachary Kaufman is a lecturer in law and fellow at Stanford Law School in California. He's also a senior fellow at Harvard Kennedy School of Government. He was speaking to me from Stanford, California.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African music mix on The Voice of America. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. From the north to the south and from the east to the west, the African music mix plays only the best.
Yes, sir. Two-Face, NATO C. Hey. Tune in at 200, 300, 1200, and 1500 UTC GMT. Every day, right here on VOA Africa.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kHz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kHz, 19.2 meter band.
And right now it's time for music from our African collection. Enjoy what we have for you today.
When leaders become misleaders and mentors become tormentors, when freedom of expression becomes a target of suppression, opposition becomes our position.
I'm in love, oh. go down now. Yeah, the sound goes. I'm in love, oh.
Making money was the plan, yeah. And we go get them by Jagaban, yeah. Girl, I always are you down, yeah.
Anytime that you're feeling down, mama say, girl, make you settle down. Tell her, say, I don't get you down. Put the smile, make you know the frown. Say, no one can pull you down. So me sing, say, win, win, win. Win, win, win. Be good, eh?
Don't
magana na magana. Bosi va baba magana na. Bosi va baba shaka lutera na. Ngobare bumumararungu. Ngobare bumumararungu. Abantu amagana na magana.
When a good girl gone bad, what you gonna do? Run, go meet her dad. You don't wanna do. Well, this is Southeast Hall, but the ranking what best, y'all. Watch this. Love confession.
She's a heartbreaker. She bend over, backbreaker. Steaming hot, what a vapor. I wanna date her. She's a heartbreaker. She bend over, backbreaker. Steaming hot, what a vapor.
Why
I wanna date her.
So tell me why you do me so. So tell me why you do me so. Baby, me never let you go. Girl, me never let you go. So tell me why you do me so. Tell me why you do me so. Girl, me never let you go. Tell me never let you go. Me spend all me money, spend all me cash. Call you me honey, but you threw me pon trash. And you think say me gon' leave you like that? No way. Why you do me like that, yeah? Girl, I'm waiting on you. Even if them hating on you. But me never send them, bro.
In my life, I've never seen melanin so dark. You're a queen of the dance floor. Night for your light when I rubbish scene, baby. Would you put me in your diary? In my life, I've never seen melanin so dark. You're a queen of the dance floor. Light when Nairobi scene, baby. Would you put me in your diary?
She's a heartbreaker. She bend over, backbreaker. Steaming hot, what a vapor. I wanna date her. She's a heartbreaker. She bend over, backbreaker. Steaming hot, what a vapor.
Boy,
I wanna date her. So tell me why you do me so.
I saw you in a magazine, or maybe on TV. Looking me up close when you're queen, you're a queen. And if you know me well, you know I don't kiss and tell. But I want you to myself, baby.
In my life, yo, me never seen melanin so dark. You're the queen of the dance floor. Nights a shall life on the legacy scene, baby. Won't you put me in your diary? In my life, yo, me never seen melody so dark. You're the queen of the dance floor. Nights I shall light for the legacy, baby. Won't you put me in your diary?
She's a heartbreaker. She bend over, backbreaker. Steaming hot, what a vapor. I wanna date her. She's a heartbreaker. She bend over, backbreaker. Steaming hot, what a vapor. I wanna date her.
So tell me why you do me so.
Body shaking like a tambourine all night. Inna me head you are the melody, baby. Inna me head you are the melody in my life. I never seen melanin so dark. You're the queen of the dance floor night. Such a light queen I'd be seen, baby. Won't you put me in your diary? Heartbreaker. She bend over, backbreaker.
Africa, steaming that water vapor. Havana Deja, she's a heartbreaker. She bend over backbreaker, steaming that water vapor. Havana Deja, yeah, yeah.
Mana nambia nasibu mini mtu mzima na wendo na kutegemea. Yanotokea jaribu kupiga kimya usidiriki atakuongea. Mara nasikia vyaibu konda kwa jima eti ugomvi umekolea. Kuchunguza karibu ni binti moja kwa mitandao anachochea. Najaribu kunyamaza ila moyo utaki. Unanambia tisimba japunguruma uiseme haki. Unajaribu kunyamaza ataliza tagio. Anasema wala unena kidogo. Na mashabiki dangote wananambia mbona usemi chochote. Ah, si uko na usiku zote. Ama ulezi unafanya uogope. Ah, na media pande zote wanalalama kiongozi atoke. Nchi naingia matope, niende wapi na mi mtoto wote. Yani lawama nisionge kimya. Oh, ninyamaze mi nisiseme kimya. Mama kanambia oh, nifunge mudomo kimya. Niepato mudoko sana nisiseme kimya. Mengi majaribu na jitahidi epuka ya sijeni cost. Japo mingine swadakta mengine ayana mana. Rafiki kipenzi wa karibu hata nyimbo yake sikuweza ipost. Ila liboka matwa ilinyumiza sana. Mitandao ni kila kona, uongo na kweli unashonwa. Kila nyumba inanongona. Ah, oh Tanzania, mara kimbembe Dodoma, bunge pinza nione goma, juzi akapotea na Roma. Oh, oh Tanzania, oh, oh, najaribu kunyamaza, Makame atakio. Ananambia walau nena kidogo. Nyumba ninafungua geti, nende kwa mangi nunua supageti. Na pewa za chini ya kapeti, kuna redio imevamiwa eti. Napita kwenye magazeti, na kutalundo la watu wameketi. Badala kutafuta seti, wanabishana tu mambo ya vieti. Wachaikae kimya. Oh, nisionge kimya. Ninyamaze kabisa. Ulimikoma kimya. Usije kunichoza. Nifunge bakuli langu kimya. Nikojwe nikalale. Ni bado mdogo sana kimya. Mama kanambia juliza na juli tunakwenda kila siku maneno atuacheni jamani. Mimi na wewe ni taifa moja, kambarage baba moja. Sa tofauti za nini? Tushikamane tukaijenge Tanzania.
That was music from the continent and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sally, reporter Douglas Mpuga, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, a crazy man can be recognized not by his words, but by his actions. I'm your host, Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very good evening, Africa.
Editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
New data was released at the July 2018 International AIDS Conference demonstrating the HIV epidemic is coming under control in Namibia. Results from the Namibia population-based HIV impact assessment show that 77% of all HIV-positive adults have achieved viral load suppression, a widely used measure of effective HIV treatment in a population. This surpasses the UN's target of 73% by 2020. Compared with the UN AIDS 2012 estimates, Namibia has reduced its adult HIV incidence rate by 50% in the past 5 years. Namibia has made this tremendous progress through the expansion of HIV prevention and treatment services, with a focus on viral load suppression at the individual and community level, and the swift implementation of forward-leading HIV policies. Women ages 15 to 24 still have a far higher HIV incidence rate than same-aged young men in Namibia. This highlights the continued need for expanded primary HIV prevention in young women and ensuring all HIV-infected men, particularly those ages 25 to 35, receive life-saving treatment and are virally suppressed. These exciting new data demonstrate that a community-centered approach results in high community viral suppression, which decreases the rates of new HIV infections, said Ambassador Deborah Birx, U.S. Global AIDS Coordinator and Special Representative for Global Health Diplomacy. She said several African countries are now on track to reach HIV epidemic control by 2020, accelerated progress that was only possible because of partner country political leadership and their rapid adoption of policies focusing primary prevention and treatment resources for maximum impact. Centers for Disease Control Director Robert Redfield said CDC continues to support Namibia's efforts to control its HIV epidemic, and we remain committed to global efforts to change the course of the HIV pandemic and help save lives. The population-based HIV impact assessments are funded by the U.S. government through PEPFAR and conducted by the CDC, ICAP at Columbia University, and local governmental and non-governmental partners. With PEPFAR support, 4 additional countries, Ethiopia, Haiti, Kenya, and Rwanda, will release HIV data on a rolling basis throughout 2019, providing an ability to chart and validate further progress toward reaching epidemic control by 2020. Together, said Dr. Birx, we are making the impossible possible, moving farther and faster toward ending AIDS as a public health threat by 2030.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.